I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. All right, Steve, Happy New Year. You know, we're in our fourth year of doing the show.
No way.
Yeah. We just had our third year in November.
Wow.
This will be the fourth year come next November. How time flies. And thank you, everybody who listens to the show and gets something out of it. Unbelievable that time passes like that.
It really is crazy. If you had asked me, I would have never come up with, like, fourth year. Absolutely not.
Well, we're talking a little bit about Dry January. This, I've been really thinking about this for much of December, and I was listening to a podcast, the Next Level podcast, that's part of the Bulwark Network, and the publisher of the Bulwark, Sarah Longwell, talked about how she wants to do a Dry January, and I've never really heard her talk a lot about drinking. And the other, one of the other co-hosts, JVL, said, you know, why are you doing that? I might have one drink every 6 months. What's the issue? And I felt like screaming back at the podcast, that's because you're a normal drinker. But yeah, she identified that, you know what, I've got to dial it back, and said, you know, I have a glass of wine every day with dinner. And I thought it was worthwhile for us to take our tradition around AA and what we do here for people who might be trying Dry January, maybe for the first time, or maybe this is a yearly thing. And one of the ways that might trip you up for Dry January are those damn cravings. Is that something that you had issues with? Do you still have issues with cravings, Steve?
No, I don't have issues with cravings these days. That's sort of been lifted. Not where physical cravings, where I'm thinking about drink. I still get some mental, and not even a craving, but I get mental ideas. I just shared this Friday night, I guess it was, that, you know, I was a big tequila drinker my whole life. And I still get the idea that, you know, that this idea, and again, it's a fantasy because I never drank this way, of sipping a glass of tequila over ice. Like, I get that fantasy, like, oh, that would be nice. And when if I let it linger long enough, like, I could taste it, I could feel the warmth of it. Like, I get those type of mental, I wouldn't call it craving, but those some thoughts. And just because of who I am, I can't play with those type of things that long. And I realize that I need to squash it pretty quickly.
No, me neither. Tequila was something I liked, but it was one of those things that I gave up before I gave up drinking because it affected my mood. Yeah. I got angry on tequila. Yeah. I found that. There's certain boozes that really didn't agree with you, and I found that I was getting really pissed off after a margarita, so I decided to give that up. Not enough to give up all alcohol.
Right.
Clearly, I just had to give up that alcohol.
Well, I did the same thing with whiskey, not to get off that track, but I did the same thing. Like, I had some problems with whiskey early on, and I sort of put together that probably happenstance, but that, like, the few times that I did get in trouble, you know, when I got arrested for a DWI and stuff, I had been drinking whiskey. And it seems like when I would have something happened with police, I wasn't arrested, but, like, when there was interaction with police, right, for whatever reason. Almost all those times early on, I was drinking whiskey, and I gave that up pretty early in my drinking. I was like, all right, I need to get away from that. I don't know if it really is true or whatever, but so anyway, I don't have cravings. I don't have physical cravings for sure. It's been, you know, it's been 13 years since I had a drink, more than that now. But yeah, I remember those cravings. I do. I mean, it's like it's been a while, but I remember how they felt. And the truth is, what I remember is not being able to control those cravings, right? That's the big thing for me. And the difference is like, yeah, you know, that physical craving then becomes the mental obsession. And sometimes it's other ways, but a lot of times it was like that physical craving, then it became like a trying to fight it off. And then I'd have this mental obsession that, oh, I got to take it. Or I start lying to myself that it'll be different this time.
So for our AA friends who are listening, and you've been sober a long time, we know in the Joe and Charlie tapes, craving equals I have alcohol in the body. and now that is manifesting a physical craving. I guess what we're really talking about, if you're going through that AA lingo, is the mental obsession, the feeling like I have to drink, but I don't have it in my body.
Right.
If you're brand new to this and you're just trying to give up alcohol, that term of craving goes hand in hand with the mental obsession.
Yeah.
I remember that I had that all the time. I had that and felt like I was doing something wrong because it wasn't going away like the old timer said that the obsession had been lifted. And it wasn't lifted for me for quite a few months. And then for whatever reason, I remember driving by the liquor store and I didn't feel like that was a place for me anymore. Almost like, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. There's nothing for me at the toy store. And that was the big time that I realized the obsession had been lifted. In that time, there were a lot of things that I found helped get me through those cravings. So the first thing was, it was sweets.
Yeah.
Eating a piece of chocolate, a Reese's peanut butter cup. Bill talks about in the book that sweets can be helpful. And there's research out there that says it's BS or it's helpful or not. I know for me that having a piece of candy was enough to help me get through. What were some of those little things that you can remember that got you through?
There is no question. I think there is a reason for why sweets work, and that is because alcohol is sugar. Right?
Yeah.
Alcohol is sugar. So when you take that out, I mean, there's also, we've talked about sugar cravings. I've talked about my own sugar addiction and stuff like that. So I think when you replace that alcohol with a piece of candy, which is also sweet, I do think it takes care of some of it, not all of it, because you don't get the reaction, you don't get the effect of the alcohol when you eat a piece of candy. So you don't get that after effect. But I think it helps you a little bit get through that early craving part. One of the things that always happened to me is that when I would get sober is I would work out, right? So one of the things that would happen to me when I first got sober is if I wasn't feeling well or I thought maybe, you know, I needed to do something, one of my things would be to go work out. For me, actually, it was run. I would run because I could do that anywhere, right? I could be home and just go out for a run, or I could go to the gym and go for a run or whatever. But that was it for me. Like, I would do a lot of that, and I would focus. I would take some of that energy that I had, and I would focus it to running. And again, this is one of the things when you're in AA, and this is different for me now. I've talked about it, but early on, I would pray, right? We talk about that, right? I would pray and ask for some relief from that. That worked, you know, for whatever reason, it worked for me, right? Like, if I prayed and I took some time to do that, I would feel some relief from it. Again, in our program, the other thing is we talk about it all the time. We talk about community here, right?
Yep.
It's about having that community so that when you are really struggling, that you can go and just talk to somebody who understands your struggle. Right? I could sit down with my wife and say, hey, I'm struggling, but she really won't get it. You know, she won't understand it the way a person who suffers from alcoholism the way I do would get it and understand it. And there's a lot of relief in that. When you pick up the phone and you talk to somebody and like you just know that they're understanding what you said, there's a lot of relief in feeling some like, oh, wow, this person gets it. And you feel, I feel better. I feel better when that happens.
This is really, really key. If you're trying to do a dry January, if you can do it with a friend, you're going to be much more successful in getting through the month. Anytime that you're doing something hard, exercise is another thing. I'll go to the gym a lot more often because my son wants to go there every single day. He's a maniac. But if I've got to drive him and drop him off and come home and pick him up again, it's a lot easier for me just to stay.
Yep.
And now I have some level of accountability. Really the same thing when you're stopping drinking. And this is one of the huge benefits of AA is you have a built-in community. That's just the way AA works, is we get sober together because I couldn't do it by myself. I think there are great benefits now of things like the Dry January app, where you're kind of simulating doing it with somebody because you're reporting in on an app. That's really, really good. If you have somebody that you can talk to and hold yourself accountable, that in a moment when, hey, I'm really feeling like a drink, I don't know if I'm going to get through with the 2nd of January, that's going to help you.
Yeah, and that's why you have to have, you know, there's lots of different programs out there. We talk about it, and I know you and I are supportive of all the programs. Any way that you can get sober, it's a good way to get sober, whatever works for you. But if your meetings are virtual, if they're online type of meetings, and you go to one or two a week or whatever they might be, and that's your only communication, well, maybe do some emailing, maybe that could work too, then I just think that's hard in a pinch, right? Especially in early sobriety. I think you need that instant at times. Again, not all the time and not everybody, but at times you need that instant contact. I know I have in the past, like, and I know you have because you've called me, like, we just feel like you need to talk to somebody who understands. And the beautiful thing about having a real community, and again, for us it's AA, for you it could be something else, is that I have a list of phone numbers in my phone, okay? And I can call up any of these people. And here's the key. I always talk about it, especially, like, there's a whole bunch of people that I talk to regularly, right? Guys who I'm not worried about their sobriety, right? I'm not. Like, if I get a phone call from them, I realize it's probably just a chit-chat or maybe some information. But if I get a phone call from somebody who I know and I don't speak to regularly, I take it in the middle of dinner, in the middle of anything, because I just want to, and again, if it's just a chit chat, I might say, hey, listen, I'm eating dinner. Can we talk a little bit later? But I take it because it may be that phone call that person needs to talk to somebody, because I've done that before. I've done it before where I just needed to talk to another person, and there's always somebody willing to take my phone call. So it's really huge to have some type of connection and some type of community that you could, you know, you can do that type of thing. You know, that's how it worked for me. Again, other people may find different ways work for them, but that's how it worked for me.
I don't have the issues where I call somebody where I'm thinking of a drink. When I have an issue, here's what it is. There's something else that's bothering me.
Right.
That it's really, really bothering, and it's acute. It has nothing to do with alcohol. But the reason I reach out is it's those things that I've discovered were the reasons that I would drink, that I would get pissed off at work, pissed off at a colleague, and my only outlet was to drink through it. Now I have tools. There are steps that help me that I can work through that ease the pain. I've replaced needing to drink with something else that gets me through it. And part of what's in that toolbox is I'm not feeling good. I will call somebody else who's in the program, because they may not identify with the specific person who's pissing me off right now, but they do know of being pissed off.
Right. And they do know of being pissed off and having used alcohol to sort of make that feeling go away. Right. That's what they know. You know, and this is what I would say, right? Going back to the dry January thing. The question is, and you talked about it, you're absolutely right. I mean, same thing. I don't call people today because I think I'm going to drink. I call people today because I have things bothering me. And those are the things I used to drink over. That's right. So the connection, like, and just like I said, I have tools now. So when I start feeling, you know, I hit a low point. I don't have depression usually. Like, I'm not a clinically depressed person, but over Christmas weekend, I felt depressed for like a day and a half, really bad. And I recognized it as depression. And I'm able to call somebody up and talk to them about that, you know?
Yep.
Or I'm able to go to a meeting, which is what I did. I went and literally, I will share that kind of stuff at a meeting, but I'm able to do that. So getting back to dry January, my thought is, like, if you are thinking about it, if you're thinking of trying it, one thing I would ask you is, what's drawing you to a dry January?
Like, that's a great, I had that. I was on the tip of my tongue. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Like, why, just like you were talking about, you know, Sarah.
Why does JVL not think that dry January should be a thing? What's the big deal? I have one drink and I can go 6 months.
Right.
What I have dry 6 months. What is it that you feel like you need to have a dry January for?
And so if you're going to do that, then I would ask yourself, like, what What do you think? Are you just, you know, because that's the start, right? I mean, I'm all for dry Januaries because
I think
the key is, like, if you struggle with it, then I think that should be, that should raise some flags for you, right? Like, if you're getting, trying to go dry January and then you're finding, like, oh my God, I'm having a difficult time getting, you know, I'm 2 weeks in and I'm jonesing for a drink. You should be concerned about that.
Yes.
And again, it doesn't mean you're an alcoholic, doesn't mean you need anything. I'm just saying it should just draw your attention to, like, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe this is a time to sort of cut back a little bit. Because there was a time, I think, for all of us and for many of us, and I think there was a time for me, I don't know because I can't turn back that time, but there was a time where I think that if I stepped, you know, if I took my drinking more seriously and cut back and started to recognize that maybe it was getting out of hand, that maybe I could have stopped it, you know, on my own without all the intervention that and all the help I needed. Again, I don't know if that's true or not, but it felt like it, I could have years before I came into this program.
This is funny because they're sort of related, but not related. I wasn't going to bring this up, but it's been on my mind. I'm really giving some serious thought to removing red meat from the diet. And the reason I want to remove red meat is not because I don't like it. And it's not really a health thing. It's my daughter goes to the farm to two daughters. They're the horses and they ride the horses and clean the stalls. But there are two cows there. And my older daughter likes to do stuff with the cows, cuddle with them, take care of them, walk them. And part of this is she is still feeling the grieving over the horse that passed away last year. Mm-hmm. She still is not ready to get back on a horse, but she loves these cows. And seeing how these cows will cuddle with her, they will give affection, like almost like a dog. Mm-hmm. And realizing these, it's not the same cow, different breed of cow, but cows have a little bit more emotion than some other animals. I think chickens are really stupid animals. But cows are not, and yet if I have a steak, that's what I'm eating. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel good about that anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is going down a different road, but those are the things that we can make changes on,
I bring it in of looking at why I'm eating something or drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what are the steps I would need to take if I want to give up eating meat? Yeah. I need to have a program of action where this isn't going to stop. It feels very much like alcohol.
Oh, I think you would. I mean, being having eaten it your whole life, I think it would be very different. Yeah, I mean, I've thought about that too. I actually have. I've thought about giving up. I've actually given up a lot of red meat. And again, I don't do it for that reason. I do it a little bit for the health reason. And I'll eat a little bit of it. I haven't torn it off. But there are, you know, there is a program that you need to figure out, whether you do that, whether it's alcohol. And then you also, you know, touched upon the reason why you might want to do it. And like with what we just talked about, you know, the problem with alcohol is, man, when it goes bad, right? And this is the whole point. When alcohol goes bad, you know, and I think most people, I really do. I think most people today, maybe most is the wrong term. I think many people have been touched by alcoholism or alcohol mm-hmm. abuse. Like there's no question. I mean, it's not a 6 degrees of separation, right? That little game. It may be 3 degrees of separation, right?
Right.
It may be a parent, or it's an uncle, or it's a sibling, or it's a grandfather. Like, it's pretty close to home that somebody, or it's a close friend, that somebody has struggled with it. So, you know, the disaster is right there in front of us all. Yet our whole society is based upon, you know, drinking and everything we do and all the advertisements and all the fun. And there's not a thing you're going to do this coming weekend that's not going to, and for most people, involve alcohol. You know, for us, it won't. You know, for most people, it's going to involve some sense of alcoholism. Alcohol, I mean. So it really becomes a difficult thing. It really does. And, you know, I wonder if that's why Dry January gets such a good kick, is because, right, people overdo it on New Year's Eve, and they wake up January 1st and they go, oh, my God, I don't want to do that again. you know?
Right.
And they say, well, maybe I need to take a break from this.
Well, dry January, there are people who just do it because they've heard the term dry January. Right. It's an actual thing that started about 10 years ago with Alcohol Change UK, where the goal here is, the mission statement is to try and change our relationship with alcohol. Not necessarily just get everybody to quit alcohol, but right. there needs to be a change in the relationship that society has to alcohol. And when people do a dry January, they tend to drink less afterwards. Or if they have some type of month where they don't do it, over time, they tend to drink less. People who have an underlying problem are probably not going to drink less. They may for a while, but you're going to pick up where you left off, which I think is one of the great things about doing this, because you can learn a lot about yourself. It could be, I just need a break and I need to clean up and I don't want to drink as much. And you can be successful there. If you're finding you got through dry January and you just pick up where you left off and say, how did this happen? I had a month. Those are some signs that mm-hmm. it's worth looking at, that your relationship may not be so good and slowing down may not work for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a, you know, when we touched on this, I meant to check it out, but I've been getting some ads on my social media feeds about a place out there that advertises drinking moderation. And I wish I remember. So, you know, this place is, and it may be an app. I think it is an app that they're pushing that helps you with drinking moderation. And, you know, that's really, really helpful for some people. And again, I think if you can do something like that and you can moderate your drinking, I think that's great. I would say the same thing that you just said, Matt. If you come out of a dry January period and you immediately pick up, or if you find yourself trying to make up for lost time,
yeah.
like trying to drink more, like, oh my God, I can drink more now because I didn't drink it. Like if you find those type of habits creeping in, again, they're red flags. It may not be, you know, it may not be over the line yet, but I really think that, you know, they're red flags. I know my red flags, right? I know what they are today. I didn't know them then. Like, this is the whole point too. Like, I wasn't looking to see if I had an alcohol problem when these red flags occurred. But nowadays I look back on it, I'm like, oh, that should have given me pause, you know? That should have given me pause for concern. And it didn't. It didn't give me pause. If it did, it was a very fleeting moment. So, if you know, again, and if they had dry January back there and I thought maybe I needed to do that, maybe I could have looked at that before it got too bad.
I totally would have done it.
Yeah.
I'm all about apps. So if you have like, if you can gamify something like this, I'm all about it. This gamifies not drinking. I love that. As a matter of fact, I wish AA had something as an app. I don't know what it would look like, but something like that around maybe the 12 steps in an app that gets you drawn in, I think that would be really beneficial. Now, I'm throwing that out there, and I can't figure out the details, but I think something in an app helps because that Dry January app kind of walks you through and gives you motivation each day.
Yeah.
If you don't make it through and you have a damp January, that's okay. If you find you're back to drinking, that's okay. Because sometimes the change in your relationship with alcohol takes time. Mm-hmm. And you've got to figure it out. You haven't failed if you don't make it through. You haven't failed if you think you have a problem and you start drinking again and you don't get it immediately. Sometimes we have to figure those things out as long as you keep trying. So there is something I want to caution you with if you're going to try a dry January. A lot of people don't want to talk to their doctor about their drinking. But I think this is kind of a soft way in of, hey, I'm looking to improve my health. I saw this thing about dry January, and I want to try it. What do you think, doc? And the reason that you want to bring your doctor in is withdrawal from alcohol can be deadly. You could die if you have enough of a problem and enough of a dependency on alcohol. Or you could get very, very sick. So it's not something to be messing around with. If you're making one of these changes, it's always good to bring your doctor in. And I know nobody who drinks too much wants to talk to their doctor about this, but it's really important and it may help you. They may be able to give you some advice.
Yeah, these days, I think doctors are more in tune to it than they were in the past. You know, it's one of the things I didn't do. I didn't share it with my doctor. I'm sure my doctor knew it. I always went to the doctor. I didn't avoid the doctor, even during my drinking years. So I'm sure, and I'm sure he talked to me about it. I don't remember him talking to me about it. I shouldn't say that. I do remember a couple of times he would talk to me about my liver enzymes going up, and he would ask me about how much I drank, but I would never be honest with him. I would never talk to him about it. And
why?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I guess part of that was I was embarrassed. I mean, again, I don't want to go back. I was embarrassed that I was an alcoholic because it was one of those things I swore I never would become because I grew up in an alcoholic family. So when I truly realized that I was an alcoholic, and I knew that probably for the last 3 years of my drinking, like I knew I was an alcoholic who could not stop. That I was embarrassed by that I had gotten to that point after just swearing I would never get there. And I was embarrassed to let people around me know I led a double life. Like I really worked hard not to be drunk in public and around family and friends, you know, most friends. So I wouldn't be honest with my doctor. But today I think you can. You can be a lot more honest with your doctor. I think they understand it more. You know, they're part of the whole community of referring people. So I do think for most doctors, you can do it. And depending on your doctor, but they will help you navigate it, right? And then you could have that conversation. And if you're going to have it, let's be honest, you need to be honest with them. For the reason why you just said, right, is like you can, you know, I would say that if you're drinking alcoholically, your doctor probably knows it if you're telling him or not. Like if you're going to the doctor, he probably knows it anyway because he can tell by the blood work. So he might know that. But yeah, you can get yourself in a really bad situation if you're not careful with it. It wasn't the case for me. I'm not sure why. I think a little bit wise. Like I said, I drank for a few weeks while I was still going to meetings. So I think I sort of tapered myself off, right? I didn't stop cold turkey. I stopped, but I still would drink a little bit here and there. And I think that sort of helped me with the withdrawals first time through.
I definitely had withdrawal after the fact. I wasn't going into delirium tremens.
Right.
But I definitely had withdrawal symptoms and I didn't realize it. Those things were like anxiety, peak anxiety, and just the need either for big bowls of ice cream or booze. It was sort of the same feeling. So something to think about if you're trying to dry January and you have those feelings. Hey, look, we're here. We're here for you. We're not just here for the alcoholic who's been in recovery for 15, 20, or 30 years. We're here for the new guy. And, you know, in AA, you get membership for a desire to stop drinking, not being an alcoholic. Same thing here. If you want to change your relationship with alcohol, this is a place for you. We want to be able to help you and reach out and tell us how you're doing. All of the social media things, Threads, Instagram, Facebook, at Sober Friends Pod, the website is soberfriendspod.com. We would love it if you would subscribe to the newsletter and also give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It does help us have that two-way conversation. Well, I know I'm already planning on, I was going to be dry this January, and I think you are too. Thanks for coming on and talking a little bit and giving people a little bit of inspiration, Steve.
Hey, Matt, that's what we do. Happy New Year to everybody. You'll be hearing this one after the first. So 2024 can be a good year for all of us. So
we can make it a great year.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
You're welcome. And next week, we'll see you again. Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.